We are doing Pirkei Avot. We were holding the second chapter, the eighth Mishnah. And we had seen that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a disciple of Hillel and Shammai. We had mentioned he was the smallest student of Hillel. And nonetheless, he became Nasi. And he had five students. We were going through the students and we discussed the history of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, who was the first Tana to show up in Shas, and he is the Rabbi Eliezer throughout Shas. Whenever it says simply Rabbi Eliezer, that is him in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya, his counterpart, whenever we encounter Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah, that is he. We discussed how poor he was, we discussed he was a blacksmith, we discussed he frequented the Roman emperor, and that he was wise in Psukim, he was able to take on the Minim. Rabbi Yosia Kohen, Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, who was a great-great son-in-law. He married the great-great granddaughter of Rabban Gamliel. And Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. And we were up to where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is going to enumerate their specific traits, their specific strengths. And before we do that, I'd like to take a minute to review what we've seen until now, the chronology, the ordering of the Nisi'im, the leaders of the Jewish people. So we began with the first Nasi, Shimon HaTzadik, who took over as Kohen Gadol after Ezra HaSofer. Which means, in the beginning of the Second Temple, we had a king, and at the same time that we had a king, we also had a Nasi. So the Nisi'im were around the concept of a leader, a spiritual leader of the Jewish people that was not the king, began already at the beginning of the Second Temple, with Shimon HaTzadik, who was Nasi, and then Antigonus Ishsocho, and then Yosef ben Yoezer, and then Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya, and then Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, and then Shmaya, who was Hillel's Rebbe. And after Shmaya, the ones that took the Nisiyut in the land of Israel were the two brothers, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yoshua, the children of Beteira. And they were Nisi'im until Hillel ascended to Israel from Babylon. When Hillel ascended to Israel, they recognized that he knew more than the two brothers. And so the two brothers stepped down and gave Hillel the position of Nasi. And then Hillel was Nasi in the century preceding the destruction of the temple. Now, in our Tana de Belio class, in the class about the 6,000 years to the existence of the world, that the world will exist 6,000 years, we went into the problems revolving around the dates of the destruction of the temple. And whenever we encounter something like this, that the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, Hillel was Nasi, the following four Nisim reigned in the last 100 years preceding the destruction of the temple. Hillel, Shimon, Gamliel, Shimon. So we have to wonder how that's going to work with the discrepancies regarding when the temple was destroyed. We discussed that there's over 100 years a question of where they disappeared, that modern history seems to say that the destruction of the temple was nearly 2 centuries later than our tradition. And the question is, how does our tradition work with the manuscripts that we have? And we brought over there a letter by Rav Schwab, a very controversial letter. But the reason I'm mentioning this here is because we see an interesting thing. Our Mishnah discusses Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was Nasi. And we know Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is also mentioned as the small disciple of Hillel. And we know also that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai made many important institutions directly following the destruction of the temple. He instituted that we shake lulav and esrog 7 days, even outside the temple, for example. There are many important institutions, the Mishnayot and Sukkah enumerate some of them, that he instituted following the destruction of the temple. Now let's ask ourselves, if Hillel lived 100 years before the destruction of the temple, and after Hillel's death, we have his son Shimon is Nasi, and then Gamliel the grandson is Nasi, and then Shimon the great grandson is Nasi, and only after that, suddenly Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes onto the scene. So we have to ask ourselves, how does that work? If he was Hillel's disciple four generations earlier, how is he Nasi at the time of the destruction? You guys with me? So again, when we approach this period, the period of the destruction, we have something here that seems to be contradictory. And you could say, well, he was a young man when he learned by Hillel. That's why he's considered the small student of Hillel. But our sages say that this small student of Hillel's mastered everything. What? So Hillel profited. Hillel said, it's brought in one version of Avot Rabbi Natan, that when Hillel was lying on his deathbed, he said, bring all my students. Is everyone here? They said, no, only the little one's missing. He said, I need that little one. And then he said, he's ultimately going to lead the generation. And the question is, why did he? Oh, so some say that what happened was, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, Hillel's great-grandson, he was executed by the Romans. He was one of the 10, one of the Asara Rugei Malchut, one of the 10 rabbis that were executed by the Romans. And some want to say that when he was executed, so the Romans wanted to kill out the whole family of Hillel. They wanted to kill out the family of the Nasi. They weren't only executing him. So the rabbis were fearful to appoint the next generation, Rabban Gamliel, as Nasi. So the rabbis appointed instead Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now we know Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was Nasi for 40 years. So he must have lived a pretty long life if he was a disciple of Hillel's 100 years earlier. And he's still going to be Nasi for 40 years. And he must have been Nasi only a year or two prior to the destruction of the temple, because the Gemara doesn't deem it necessary to mention that he was Nasi before the destruction. We know he was Nasi for a period before and a period after the destruction of the temple, totaling 40 years. And when the Gemara in Shabbos enumerates who were the Nasim who led us prior to the destruction, the Gemara makes no mention of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Gemara simply says, Hillel, Shimon, Gamliel, Shimon, Nagun, Nesiutan, Lifnei Abayit, Arbim Shana, Meah Shana. 100 years before the destruction of the temple, they were the leaders. So again, we have a gray area here. And again, we have to wonder what's going on. And we'll leave it at that. Those of you who want to know more about it can see the Tan de Belial class on the web, the class on 6,000 years, that the world is going to last 6,000 years. So let's continue. Now that we discussed a little bit, who is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? I didn't follow what you're saying.
Like, is there people Christians or something that use this as an example of how even there's discrepancy from...
It's not a discrepancy. It's a discrepancy between our recording of history and the history book's recording of history. And the question is, who got it right? And the question is also, we have a tradition... The Gemara tells us that many of the names of the kings, the Persian kings, were the same person. If you work with that assumption, then even though in the Persian records it says such and such king, such and such king, such and such king, our Gemara says they were all one and the same. So then the question is, can you really work with those history books when we don't know? If when they use different names, they mean different kings, or maybe like our Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah and in Megillah, that there were kings that had multiple names, Achashverosh, Atachshasta, Daryovesh. You can see Rashi and Daniel quotes it, it's Gemaros. So that's one of the answers that's given, that when you read these history books, you cannot derive when the date of the destruction of the temple was, because you don't know how to factor which kings were really one and the same, even though they're using different names. Doesn't have to concern us, but it.
We have our own history. It's like here, the people they say, "Well, nothing happened in Egypt. Nothing happened in Egypt." Well, our historical record isn't good enough. It is good enough.
This is slightly different, because this will have certain ramifications. I mean, it might have ramifications on how we write a shtar, for example. So what you say is, this is our tradition, and I'm not going to go change what's been done for the last 1,000 years. So in that respect, it's not so important. It's a little bit more important when you're giving a class in front of guys like Machon Meir students who might know of the discrepancy. So you should at least recognize it, so they don't feel like you're talking and you don't know what you're talking about, like what it says in the external world. If you're giving a class in front of yeshiva guys who don't study this, so it's less important. Like you're saying, we have our tradition. Fine, we're going to go with it. Whether we're to understand it literally and we're supposed to try to answer up what they said, or we're supposed to try to answer up what we said, that's a different discussion and it's not so relevant. But when you're talking in front of a bunch of guys who all have a very strong secular background, so then you have to watch what you say and at least recognize that there is an issue to be dealt with. So, on the internet, it's the Tana de Be'elio class. I don't remember which chapter, but I think it's either the end of the first chapter or the beginning of the second. It says over there, the world will be 6,000 years. That's the class. The Tan de Be'elio, where he discusses that the world will be extant for 6,000 years. Look on torahforme.org. Torah with an H, forme.org. And then there are Tanna Dvei Eliyahu under Medrash. There's a folder Medrash, and over there there's Tanna Dvei Eliyahu. Yeah.
But the discrepancy is within our own books. Right?
No, it's not within our own books.
Yeah, we're saying that we don't know where how.
Our books don't match the Persian history books. But it's not within our own books. Within our own books, there's no discrepancy. No, I'm pointing out that here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, where his nesiut fits in, is something that needs to be reckoned with. And it's not dealt with clearly in the Shas. For us, for our own sake. I'm saying, but that's not discrepancy. That's something which we answered up as I was quoting it. I answered it. I said, maybe he was Nasi only for a year or two prior to the destruction. And maybe he was a very young man. It's unclear. It doesn't say. It's not dealt with because it's not so important. It's interesting, but it's not critical for us. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hukanus, so his praise was as follows, and it's interesting. He began by saying, if you've learned a lot of Torah, don't take credit for it. This is the way God fashioned you. And now, he's going to stress the strong points of each of the Tanoim, and if we take his first directive, his first message, don't take the credit for yourself, so we could also understand that each Tana had different strengths depending on how God fashioned them. Rav Eliezer ben Hurkanus is bor sud, is like a pit that's totally encased, so they've lined the pit very well, shenoma bet tipa, so that when you put in wine or water, you don't lose a drop. That's how Rav Eliezer ben Hurkanus retained everything he learned from his Rabbein. Rav Yeshua ben Chananiah was another great sage. Ashrei Yoladeto, praised is the one that bore him, his mother. He has excellent traits. And everyone who sees him says, wow, praised is the mother that raised such a child. And our sages say that she really took the credit for him being the way he was, that she would go around the Batei Medrash in her city, and she'd say, please pray for the child in my stomach that he should be a chacham. And from the day he was born, she would always bring his crib near the Beis Medrash, so he should always hear words of Torah. So the conclusion that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reached was, we do have to thank his mother. Look, it worked. Praised is his mother. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Chassid. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen always goes beyond the call of duty. Our sages say in Shabbos that he ensured that there was never a non-Jewish mailman carrying his letter, so that he won't come to carrying it on Shabbos. So he was always extra pious. He always went beyond the call of duty. Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, Yerechet. He is a person who's extra stringent on himself. Even with things that are permissible, he forbids them to himself because he's fearful of sin. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, that's the greatest student. He is Mayana Mitgaber. He is like a stream that's overflowing. He's got a wide heart. He can take what he's learned and add to it. He knows how to figure things out from beyond what he's taught. He's the top student. Hu haya omer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai used to say, Im yu chol chachmei Yisrael b'chaf muznaim, if all the rabbis were on one side of the scale, Eliezer ben Hurkanus b'chaf shnei, and Eliezer ben Hurkanus is on the other side of the scale, machriat kulam, he weighs down the scale against everyone because he had the best memory. Abba Shaul omer mishmo, Abba Shaul quotes in his name, and it was pointed out to me that Rabbi Feinstein says, we call him Abba Shaul because the word Abba we find in the Gemara is a word of praise. The Gemara says, "Enomim Abba Plonit Veima Plonit." When you speak to a servant, you don't give him this word of praise, Abba Ploni, Abba Meir, or Abba Chaim, because someone might think he's your father, and then they'll say you don't have good lineage. They won't let their children marry with your children. So even though the word Abba was used as a word of praise, you don't give that praise to servants. And Abba Shaul, they didn't want to call him by his name privately, so they called him Abba Shaul, like Mr. Shaul. Yeah, and from here we see, just want to conclude, I was quoting the name Rabbi Feinstein, I don't know if it's written, that Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal said that one may use one's father's name when one is adding a word of praise, like this. My father, my teacher, Chaim. My father, my teacher, Moshe. That when one adds words of praise, he may say it. I remember that Avi Mori says so. But I remember that the Tiferes Yisrael questions that. There's somewhere in the Tiferes Yisrael that he hypothesizes, he postulates whether this would be good or not, and he brings proofs to both directions. That's what I remember. I don't remember where, but I've written. I don't know. Yeah.
You call your father father, and you call your other dad father teacher.
Now, here we're talking about to call the father. If someone asks you, what's your father's name? So, can you say, my father, my teacher, and say his name? So that's what we're talking about. When one quotes their father and they want people to know who he is. So that's what we're talking about. Here they called him Abba Shaul. Yeah. Not that I remember.
I always forget one of my favorite stories.
I don't remember. Not that I remember. It says clearly not. No.
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 Do you remember the name of...
No. I don't remember. Abba Shaul Omer. Abba Shaul says, Mishmo, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Im yuchol chachmei Yisrael b'chaf muznaim, if all the rabbis were on one side of the scale, Rabbi Elazar ben Hurchnos afim mehen, and Rabbi Elazar ben Hurchnos would be with them. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach bechaf shniyah, and Rabbi Elazar ben Arach were on the other side of the scale. Machiat kulam, he could weigh all of them down with his sharpness, with his ability to derive things. Amar lahim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to these students, they all attained great heights in midot, and he told them, tzeu u'ru'u, I want you to go out from your stature and go see ezui midai shorash yidbak ba'adam. Choose one trait that the average man can cling to, and with that trait, he will be able to grow and attain all the good traits. So, you guys, you've attained it. But I want you to give directions to the average man. So, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer came to the conclusion, Ayin Tova. A person has to have a good eye. If a person has a good eye, so then what he has, he'll look at fondly, he'll be happy with what he has. When his friend is successful, he'll be happy at his friend's success. When things go well for others, he won't be jealous. He won't be worried about his own future because he's always happy with what he has. He won't get angry. So these are all things. When a person is worried about what he'll have, when a person is jealous of others, when a person is angry, these are all things our sages taught us that weaken our ability to remember things. If a person wants to have a good memory, he wants to learn Torah, he wants to succeed in the most important things in this world in learning Torah, so he has to avoid these situations. How do you avoid these situations? Have a good eye and things won't disturb you. So, Rabbi Lazar, remember, what was his trait? He had an amazing memory. He retained everything he learned. So when he was looking for what's the good trait, he said, bottom line, you have a good eye, you got it covered. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Rabbi Yeshua says, Chaver Tov, a person should try to acquire a good friend. Because a good friend helps a person figure out what's right, gives him good advice, tells him when he really has things to fix, and a person doesn't have to be embarrassed. That we discussed earlier. And the Tiferes Yisrael here says a very interesting thought. He says, who was Rabbi Yeshua's good friend? Was his mother. That's what he says. Interesting. Rabbi Yossi Omer, my father once told me, and I think Rashi quotes this, that Chaver Tov can be a safer. I think Rashi, I don't have the Rashi here, but if I'm not mistaken, Rashi on this Mishnah says, some say it could even be a safer. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Shachin Tov, a good neighbor, because a brother is limited in a good friend is limited. He's not always there. A good neighbor, so they help one another. And with a good neighbor, so part of being a good neighbor is that you help the other one even at a cost to yourself. That's part of being a good neighbor. Those of you who have roommates here in Machon Meir, you know that that's how it works. You want to be a good roommate, so you're always going to be helping the other even when it's at your own expense. What was Rabbi Yossi HaKohen? He was the Hasid. So he's giving us the directive how to attain that height. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Haweta Nolad, the ability to see the future. What's the main reason people sin? Because they don't look beyond the sin. They look at the moment. Any person who would look at a distance wouldn't sin. The reason we sin is we forget the future. So Rabbi Shimon says, you want to work on one thing that will help you be a good person? Always be able to see beyond the moment. If you have that perspective, then you won't come to sin. Rabbi Elazar Omer Lev Tov. Rabbi Elazar says a good heart. If a person has a good heart, he's always happy. He's always ready to help others. His happiness is going to help him in his learning. A good heart. A person should always have a good heart, a positive heart. Amar lahem. So after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai heard what they all said, he said, Ro'ani divrei Elazar ben Arach mi divreichem. From all of what you said, I see that Elazar ben Arach, his is the best. Shebichlal v'rav divreichem. His words encompass all of your words, meaning each of you said an excellent point. But if I have to look for one trait, so his point will lead you to all of your points. So that's why he held of his. When I started dating, so I went to a person, Zatzal, and I asked him, what do I look for in a girl? How should I look for a girl? And he told me Rabbi Elazar ben Arach's words. He said, look for a lev tov. Shebichlal zvarav divrechem. You find a lev tov, you find someone with a good heart, you found everything. So he told me the thing you're looking for in a girl is a good heart. And with that, we're going to switch to our dating class, and we'll finish the Mishnah Be'ez Hashem next week.